And we are joined now by two individuals from Care Partners of Cook County, Kay Grinland, Executive Director, and a staff member, Debbie LaMusca, who is Senior Rides and Volunteer Coordinator, I believe, from what I read. And we are here to have them give us a little description of Care Partners, but primarily to talk about the idea and availability of palliative care. And maybe starting with you, Kay, if you can just give us a general overview of Care Partners, and then maybe, Debbie, you can tell us a little bit about your role there, too. So start with Kay.
Sure. Care Partners is a collaborative of the hospital and the clinic and the North Shore Healthcare Foundation. And our goal is to provide supportive care for people with advanced illness and at end of life. Originally started from a really community effort to start a hospice program, and we figured that this is the closest thing we could get to it with our little community. And so we do palliative care, which we're going to talk about, and we support caregivers and all, you know, manner of things that help support people who are getting on, frail, end of life, to stay in their homes and to stay and have a quality of life.
How does your program extend to people who aren't necessarily aged but have a dependency on because of an illness of some kind
sure.
that requires additional care?
Yeah, our average client is about 90. Oh, but okay. But no, we do support care, you know, with the caregiver program, and also anyone, you know, with cancer or, you know, advanced illness that
no
really,
matter what age,
you know, needs an extra layer of support there.
Right. And Debbie, what is your role?
Well, it's continually changing at this point. And so my most recent venture has been as a co-facilitator for a program called Powerful Tools for Caregivers. And this is a support program for people who are involved in caregiving, whether it's in their home or if it's just supporting a loved one who's in a facility. And we can talk more about that if you'd like. Mm-hmm. After Kay fills us in a little bit more about palliative care, we'll understand more the needs of why we need to support the caregivers.
And Debbie's also coordinates our senior rides program and helps us with volunteer coordination.
Okay, volunteers who are in caring for someone or giving rides to a person who's not able to drive or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah, well, let's maybe start with a little definition, or your definition at any rate, of palliative care.
Yes. Palliative, actually that means to cloak, to cover. And it's supportive medicine versus curative medicine. So if you imagine like chemotherapy, you know, trying to kill the disease, knock it out, palliative care is the one that helps you deal with the nausea and the pain and helps you still enjoy quality of life. And so there's a lot of in there about comfort, skilled management of symptoms. And I'm not an expert on palliative care, but I teach a lot about it through my job. You know, there's really, you know, a fine science to what pain medicine goes with what symptom and how to really help folks out. It might be spiritual pain, it might be social pain, because it really looks at the whole person.
And this is kind of a new aspect of medicine, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, you know, you didn't need it so much before when people had an accident or pneumonia and the flu and they died in a couple of weeks. But now that we have all these cancers, all these chronic illnesses that go on and you have to learn how to live with them, palliative care has become very important.
And your organization, Care Partners, has been in existence since when?
You know, people started hanging around about 2006, becoming hospice volunteers and that kind of thing. But we became Care Partners in 2010. And then that next year started offering services.
And you have offices where?
We're in the lower level of the Sawtooth Mountain Clinic.
Okay, and how many staff persons are there?
There's myself and Debbie and then Jeanette Lindgren is our main care coordinator. She's an RN, the caregiver coach, and so she does a lot of the important interface with clients.
Well, she's the medical professional, basically.
Right, correct, exactly.
And is this kind of unique to a small community like ours, or are there more and more of them around?
Oh, indeed.
It is unique. You know, most palliative care programs are in the big hospitals, and they've got your palliative care, you know, doctors and nurses and chaplains and physicians, and it's a whole department. And by all means, if anybody out there is in Mayo or the cities or Duluth with a lot of doctors, a big advanced illness, get a palliative care consultation and, mm-hmm. and get them talking to each other and thinking about your life.
It's available. I mean, it's not like we invented this. It's available everywhere now where
right.
Intensive care is given to yep. patients.
And there is a slow movement of bringing it into the rural communities. We were part of a Stratus Health group where they gave us a lot of technical advice getting started, trying to figure out how to do it in a small community. Mm-hmm. We have our own brand. It doesn't look like anything you'd mm-hmm. see in the city because sure. we're so small. Mm-hmm. You know, we depend on the clinic doctors. They're great doctors to, you know, do the clinical piece, the nurses, the care center, the hospital, the social workers at the county.
All the volunteers in different aspects.
Local clergy, you know, to step mm-hmm. in if there's a spiritual concern. So mm-hmm. we really are coordinating across the community.
There are certain specific type diseases or illnesses that are more important or more common mm-hmm. that you're involved with, I would guess.
Yes.
And what is it Jeanette? Is that her name?
Jeanette, yep. Jeanette. Yes.
What kind of patients does she deal with?
We have some cancer patients, a lot of people with cardiac disease, lung disease.
Just aging, the quality of mm-hmm. life as you age.
Frail, mm-hmm. yeah, arthritis.
And you're, and, dementia. And she as a nurse obviously is observant of mm-hmm. medical conditions, but she's not the person who's the primary care, medical care, obviously.
Right.
No.
Yeah, we depend on the doctor and the home health nurses. She goes out more to listen. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a huge skill, and a lot of the other professionals, you know, in the healthcare system don't have time. But she can do a home visit, she can come listen, she can do some disease education. How do you live with Parkinson's? You know, how do you make a friend of it?
Does she see sometimes the things that the family doesn't always see? She might notice something that is a problem for the care receiver, but the family hasn't noticed that this is impacting their life. So Jeanette's very observant.
Or the treating physician may not have observed them in the home. Right. Or
correct.
Whatever.
Yeah, like maybe
correct.
If you wear shoes instead of slippers at home, your hip wouldn't hurt so much, you know?
Yeah.
Little things like that.
And it's not just end-of-life care, is it? I mean, it's
right. You know, palliative care came out of the hospice movement. It has a lot of the same philosophies, you know, a team approach, the whole person, a lot of communication. But it's, you know, it's for anyone who, you know, needs help, you know, supporting a quality of life or maintaining their life as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have palliative care along with curative care. There was a study, I forget where, but they had stage 4 lung cancer patients, and they did one sample. They gave them the aggressive chemo, and the other sample of people, they gave just palliative care, and that group of people lived longer.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, it's obvious to me that would be the case, but,
right.
you know, I don't know that the medical community, I'm not blaming them at all, but mm-hmm. have really thought that through. The holistic idea of dealing with a person at the end of their life is more than just intravenous feeding and
right.
breathing tubes and that sort of thing. That was interesting. I think I read somewhere preparing for this that, you know, like you described, the people with palliative care actually live longer. I mean, you think of it as maybe you're trying to make the end come more quickly and less pain, but it's less painful and they live longer.
Right.
And that's really interesting. And how about any conflicts with the medical community? I don't imagine we have any here. This is such a
integrated.
Yeah.
So supported in the community here by the doctors, the nurses, the clergy, all of the systems. And Jeanette and Kay have worked really well of getting that melded together so people call on each other and support each other.
I think, you know, Sandy Stover is our medical director for the program. And even she says, you got to keep reminding me because we get so focused on treating and curing that we forget, you know, about referring to care partners or those other needs.
Exactly. And yeah, I was reading an article. Actually, it was just it was a New York Times article today or yesterday by the title of the article is "They Call Me Dr. Kevorkian," and it's a MD, a woman who is a palliative care expert, and on a palliative care team, and she has sometimes conflicts with the ICU doctors who may be just focused on keeping the body alive and going, and not attentive to some of the things that she can be attentive to, and she says it's a difficult adjustment sometimes in some of the larger hospitals, especially.
Right. I think we're a smaller community. You know, we don't have the silo effect, and people really are at a more human to human level here, and I think that really helps.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking here on the Roadhouse with Kay Grinland and Deb LaMusca from the Care Partners in Cook County, specifically talking about palliative care and the idea of dealing with holistic care.
Right.
How do you describe what that means?
Well, I think means dealing with the whole person.
The whole person.
So spiritual, mm-hmm. social, physical, you know, it's the housekeeping needs, it's the social, the financial, the whole package.
The family changes, the changing family dynamics, the mm-hmm. role reversals that might occur.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where our volunteers come in, because they really can have an influence. You know, we teach them, you know, we don't have the palliative care chaplain, but we attend to a lot of spiritual things, like mm-hmm. the need to tell their story,
mm-hmm.
the
oh,
need
really.
To know that their life is meaningful, the need to know they're significant. And, you know, so learning how to listen and really, well, you know, it's a gift to both, you know, when you really hear somebody's story like that.
And I mean, certainly the people who benefit from this are both the patient and the family or the caregivers.
Right.
I mean, I assume
Correct.
You guys have received testimonials, in effect, from
Sure.
family members and so on.
Yep.
Describe how that works.
Well, Kay, do you think that's why it's so important that we're looking at Palliative Care Month as well as Caregiver Support Month? Because it is the picture of the recipient and the families as well. And so most communities or areas that have support systems in place for end of life or palliative care also have a number of resources available for the caregivers as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think we're all going to the same place.
That's right.
And we have family members that are all going to the same place.
Yep.
And so it's something that touches every single one of us.
Right.
I mean, I can't imagine having a senior citizen like myself not having experienced anybody in their family in such a situation, but because I have. And it's a very, very helpful thing to the family,
yep.
particularly,
mm-hmm.
as well as making life as comfortable as possible for the patient.
Mm-hmm. And one thing we didn't talk about with the palliative care sense is we have a lot of clients with dementia and Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't require so much the palliative care medicine, but it's a huge job and challenge for the caregivers.
The caregiver is almost most of your focus in that situation,
right.
I suppose.
Right.
Correct.
What about funding? How is your office funded?
We were lucky. We got a huge grant from the state. The state got smart and said, hey, we're not going to be able to put all the baby boomers in the care centers mm-hmm. of Minnesota. We need to keep people in their home. And so they gave us a $200,000 grant for 3 years to really, you know, get on the ground and get going. And we've also gotten some money through the Federal Older Americans Act to do the caregiver coaching that we do. And the senior rides program.
Senior rides.
Yep. Mm-hmm. But then we're dependent on other donations. We don't get any. We do get donations from clients, but mostly we get, you know, foundations like Lloyd K. Johnson and some of the local foundations.
We have fundraisers as well.
Yep. Our Light Up a Life program's coming up in December.
But part of the rationale of the state is that this is actually economically sound investment.
Yes. Yep.
Not only is it providing a very humane treatment to a lot of people, but it's probably less than if we, I don't want to use the warehouse, but put them in care centers without proper care.
And, you know, services like Jeanette offers help people out of the ER, you know, because there's fewer crises if there's better planning and education about how to manage something.
Sure. And what does it cost the patient and the family to take advantage of your services?
Well, because we have such a small community, we aren't affiliated with any large organization. And I think many hospitals see palliative care and end of life as still a money-making aspect. And that's not the case here, because in our small community, that's not going to happen. And so we're all volunteer. Our volunteers, other than the three paid staff, our volunteers that go into homes, our volunteers that go into the hospital, into the care center, our volunteers who do the driving for senior rides.
Yep.
It's all community-based. Yeah.
And we don't charge the clients. We do, and we need to get better at this, ask them if they would, you know, help share in the cost and donations and give them an opportunity for
what
that.
What about insurance coverage?
You know, nada? We could try to get a contract, but the amount of hours I would have to put in to four or five clients, it just doesn't make sense.
Okay, but let's say in a metro, or if you were in the Mayo or in St. Mary's in Duluth or something like that, and that would probably be part of your
care, and Medicare based
build to your insurance carrier or Medicare. Mm-hmm. So what do you think, what are your views and how does this program impact ICUs or prolonging of life and at all cost?
Well, I think the biggest change we're seeing is that healthcare directives and end-of-life planning is becoming really big. All of the doctors are aware of it. It's something that Jeanette does when she goes out to visit people. That allows people to maybe stay in their home, not incur the large cost of care centers. And I think it's recognizing that people don't necessarily want longevity. They want quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't necessarily mean less life, but quality of life. Is there anything else you'd like to add about that I haven't asked you about in terms of palliative care? Now's your chance to pitch something.
Some of our services, Jeanette provides the palliative care coordination. She also does caregiver coaching, help caregivers realize how stressed they are and make a plan, what they want. And
we also have a caregiver support group in town that was facilitated by one of our volunteers, Vicki Biggs Anderson. She saw that there's a need out there. Family caregivers don't know how to navigate. They need skills. So it's peer-led and it's peer-driven. That's an important resource. Another one is this Powerful Tools for Caregivers class that we're teaching. We'll be offering that twice a year. It's a 6-week program that teaches people how to find resources, how to deal with their own emotional stress, how to learn new communication skills if you're dealing with a dementia patient. And we'll be starting a new respite program, which will be in conjunction with the senior center. And that will be twice a month that we'll have 4-hour blocks of time where a caregiver can drop off their care receiver. They can have an afternoon to themselves, which will be really a lightening of their load, kind of.
And how do people get referred to you guys?
It can be through a doctor, nurse, through a self-referral, through a friend, some of our volunteers say, my neighbor.
Okay. Public health.
You know, we work pretty closely with Cook County Public Health and Human Services.
So in a small town, less chance that someone is going to slip through the cracks. We identify them.
Yeah, we hope so. Yeah. And well, I want to put in a plug, too, for volunteers. We really depend on volunteers to help do the visits. And
yeah, I think that's the most amazing thing about what you've told me tonight. Yeah. This is all these volunteers that are involved in this. We know the family members are, but there's a lot of other people, too, that are not family members who are involved.
So we have a new upcoming volunteer training program that will be December 3rd, and that will be another training program for the senior rides. It's a one-day program. It'll be 2 hours. December 3rd in the lower level of the Sawtooth Mountain Clinic. And we'll also be offering another caregiver volunteer in the spring to facilitate more.
And I'm seeing a website here under the North Shore Healthcare Foundation.
Yep.
You guys have
we have a page on there.
Yep.
So lots
you can
of
look
information.
Up information there, yep. too. Well, Kay and Deb, thank you very, very much for coming here and enlightening us about this, and good luck with the program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.